Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now a debate between two candidates for governor of New York who are not named Andrew Cuomo. With us in the WNYC studios are Cuomo's main opponent in next Tuesday's Democratic primary, Zephyr Teachout, and the Republican nominee who will be on the ballot in November, Rob Astorino. Mr. Astorino is the two-term Westchester County Executive. Ms. Teachout is a Fordham University law professor and author of the book Corruption in America, From Benjamin Franklin's Snuffbox to Citizens United. Why are we having this kind of odd debate? Well, the two campaigns proposed it to us on the rationale that Governor Cuomo is refusing to debate Teachout before the primary. So this is a way to raise the profile of democracy a little bit before next Tuesday's vote. Obviously, it raises these candidates' profiles, too, for their own purposes, which I don't care about one way or another. For my part and for WNYC's part, we are looking past the politics of the candidates' interests. We just think it's a great opportunity for an unusual and probably productive New York conversation. My job as host of this show is to make sure that important issues get discussed during election season and discussed in a way that voters will notice so more people are informed and maybe more people vote. So if the governor is lying low and refusing to debate in order to minimize public discussion as a political strategy, and if having Teachout and Astorino in a room together creates a little buzz around public discussion, I'm all for it. I will moderate that debate. Here we go. Rob Astorino, Zephyr Teachout, welcome back, both of you, to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be with you. And Zephyr, good to be with you, too.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here and to get a chance to introduce our ideas to your listeners.
And for the record, as the two of you know, the format for this debate is informal. We'll just have a conversation for the next 40 minutes or so and two-minute closing statements at the end. I'll make sure you get roughly equal time as we go and that you answer the questions. So the number one issue for so many New Yorkers is good jobs and the economy. You two definitely disagree on how to create more good jobs. Mr. Astorino, your website calls New York, quote, the most business-unfriendly state under Governor Cuomo. Take a couple of minutes and tell us why you think so and what you would do about it.
Well, we are. I mean, we are losing as a state and losing very badly as, you know, when we measure up against the other states, we're dead last in all the wrong categories or very close to the bottom in categories that matter to you and I, to any typical New Yorker. And this governor has done nothing to turn this state around. In fact, I think on a good day, he's just managing the decline. Overall, though, he's accelerating our demise. And when you have the highest taxes in America, as we do, when you have the worst business climate, when you have the worst economic outlook, especially upstate New York, these are the things that really matter, and he has done nothing about it. Now, in our jobs plan that we put out, we started in Binghamton. And why Binghamton? Because the U.S. Conference of Mayors ranked 363 U.S. metropolitan areas in America. 10 of the worst 20 in America are here in New York. Binghamton, dead last, 363rd. Right next to Binghamton, unfortunately, is Rome, Utica. You go through the list, and they're all in upstate New York. And so his policies have done nothing except drive people out of New York. And, you know, I kind of say it's like a prison sentence to live in New York now because people are counting off the days until they get out. And that's what's happened. We've had 400,000 New Yorkers in just the last 3.5 years flee this state, chasing jobs. Now, I have said that taxes have to come down. We're the highest tax state in America. We've got to get government and the 750,000 regulations that New York puts on businesses off the chest of businesses so they could actually breathe and expand, and that would mean hiring. Specifically, I know this is an area where Professor Teachout and I disagree tremendously, but I think that we need natural gas exploration in New York. Specifically, the Utica Shale and the Marcellus Shale covers about two-thirds of New York.
Hold the fracking story for a minute. We'll get to fracking a little later. So that's one way to create jobs, also lowering taxes. you said in Zephyr Teach Out, I have a wild guess that you will disagree with most of what we just heard. So how would you distinguish yourself both from Rob Astorino and from Andrew Cuomo on creating good jobs?
Well, you said that Andrew Cuomo wasn't here, but in the last answer, I felt like Andrew Cuomo was here, because this is an area where Andrew Cuomo's vision of New York is very similar to Rob Astorino's. It's a very traditional conservative, real trickle-down Reagan approach towards economic development. And I appreciate Rob with being straightforward about his Republican roots here. It's an area where Andrew Cuomo really is much more of a Republican than a Democrat. My own view is that what we need to do is invest in our schools, invest in our infrastructure, and then my jobs plan depends first — there's several prongs of it. The first prong is not just banning fracking. I know we'll talk about fracking some more. But building a renewable energy infrastructure. Mark Jacobson of Stanford University has examined New York State and said, look, if we actually decide to move towards 2030 and try to have 100% renewables by the year 2030, that could lead to hundreds and thousands of jobs. We'd be following the lead of California. We'd be building offshore wind, upstate solar. Second big area that's really important to me is truly making New York a high-tech center. And we've had a lot of high-tech entrepreneurs very excited about our campaign. And what they'll say is, what we need to do to make New York really the center of high-tech industry and 21st century transportation is affordable higher education and affordable high-speed broadband. So my campaign and my running mate Tim Wu's campaign are very focused
government
on that.
Those are government investments.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a real traditional Democrat. I'm an FDR Democrat. And when we're facing a crisis like this, you know, Rob and Andrew Cuomo couldn't be more different in their approach towards economic development.
So let me ask the two of you to put on your headphones, because I'm going to play some clips, and that's the only way you'll hear them. And listeners, of course, you'll hear them too. These are two 30-second clips of Governor Cuomo from this year's State of the State address and his framing of tax cuts and job creation success, and I guess of him being kind of a moderate on these issues. Here's the first 30 seconds.
We now have the lowest middle class tax rate in over 60 years. And we don't just have lower tax rates. We have a fairer tax code. We went from a flat tax in the state of New York, where everyone paid the same income rate, regardless of how much income they earned, to a graduated rate, which is much more fair for the people of the state.
And the governor went on to argue in the State of the State this year that those tax reforms did help create jobs.
The proof is in the pudding, and the arrows are pointing up. We've added 380,000 new private sector jobs since 2010. New York is now ranked number 2 in the nation in number of jobs created since the recession. We have given New Yorkers a government that costs less, taxes less, and actually does more for the people who are in need.
Governor Cuomo from the State of the State in January. So listening to all three of you, would it be fair to say that Governor Cuomo is to the right of you, Zephyr Teach Out, but to the left of you, Rob Astorino, you first?
Well, first of all, I will say one thing. I'm nothing like Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo is under investigation by the federal government for his involvement in the Moreland Commission scandal.
And we'll get to that as a separate
and
topic.
He is the guy that's under investigation. I cut taxes in Westchester County. We had the highest property taxes in America when you put schools and towns in the county. They had been spending like crazy and taxing like crazy, and it was forcing people to leave. And so when I ran in 2009, I said, we're going to cut taxes and live within our means. And we did. We cut property taxes on the county level more than any county in New York State.
But in running for governor.
Well, we do have a smaller budget. Cuomo hasn't cut the budget. He's added billions to it. We have cut the budget in Westchester without going after social programs, because we actually, in most departments we cut, including my own, 20% out of the county executive office, but we added to social services because we made our money work more smarter.
So, but if the governor were to suggest that he is in the common sense center, not to free market, like maybe he'd say Rob Astorino is, not to government-controlled, like maybe he'd say Zephyr Teachout is. How would you respond to that possibility?
I just look at what he's done. He began his governorship proposing cuts to education funding, and in fact, we're at a 65-year low in terms of the state's support for education. I know we'll be talking more about schools. That's something I'm very passionate
about.
Coming up next. But really, if you look at what his priorities have been, it's been a tax giveaways. It's been bank tax repeal. It's been, you know, Startup New York, which he likes to promote, but is really specialized tax giveaways again. And, you know, when I look at the evidence, I see the recent report that showed that we spend $1.6 billion every year on tax giveaways. And from 2009, 2013, that led to less than 1% of the jobs in this state. But the most important thing is what's happening on the ground. You know, I talk to people every day who are talking about the social services they're not getting, the social support they're not getting, the scarcity they feel in their schools, the way the roads are crumbling, the infrastructure is crumbling. And so you can feel that we have a tax giveaway governor here.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Brian Lehrer with the Rob Astorino Zephyr Teachout debate. Some very short takes on the economy, and then we'll go on to education for a deep dive. Should New York City be allowed to set its own minimum wage, which Mayor de Blasio wants but Governor Cuomo opposes? Zephyr Teachout?
Yes, and this morning I stood with fast food workers demanding $15 an hour.
Rob Astorino?
No, because this is one area where Governor Cuomo was right the first time, and then he flipped in order to secure the Working Families Party endorsement, which, by the way, should be investigated on what he did, promising something in return for their endorsement, including $10 million to try to take out certain people.
Oh, so in fairness to the way I characterized position, he was against it, and now he's for it.
And he flipped. There's no question about it. But economically, you can't have every area determine a different rate. We would be cannibalizing each other. A $13 rate or a $15 rate in upstate New York will crush the economy up there, which is already in a recession, and people will leave and they will be fired unfortunately, they can't afford it.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, I think a core of my campaign for your listeners who haven't been following is really developing a small business economy. And 77% of small business owners in a recent survey said they want to see raised minimum wage, because what they're finding is they're getting outcompeted by the big box stores or the fast food chains, which are paying rock bottom wages.
What should the minimum wage be, in your opinion, Rob Astorino?
There's no set number in my mind, unlike a 10-10 or a 13 or a 15. But I think we have gradually raised it.
Do you believe minimum wage
at all?
Yeah,
I have no problem with that. No, I don't have a problem with it. However, look at what the effective minimum wage is in North Dakota. Effectively, it's $15 to $20 because unemployment's 2%, because they have an economic boom because of the energy industry in North Dakota where people are flocking to. So, you know, if you make it harder and harder for some small businesses upstate especially, I mean, if they wish to – I mean, you go areas upstate where there is no Home Depot for a very long period of miles. And if they wish to raise the minimum rates, they could. I mean, they could pay whatever they want to pay to bring in business.
The individual employer. But Governor Cuomo signed a bill last year, if I've got my numbers right, to raise the state minimum wage to $9 an hour over 3 years. So, again, is he the common sense center between the two of you?
No, and when he did it, and only after pressure. This is not Governor Andrew Cuomo's own initiative. This is truly disappointed and betrayed Democrats saying, look, we have somebody in office here who's acting a lot more like a Republican. And when he did it, he actually did it along with a subsidy for the big box stores, which is a real problem for an open, competitive market.
Between the two
of you?
You
know, I think you're listening to two people who disagree but are principled. Andrew Cuomo stands for nothing. Nothing. He's all about pursuing the next powerful position or staying in power. I mean, he has flipped on anything conveniently to get ahead, and he stands for nothing. I think that's the biggest problem both of us have with him. We may disagree on how to get there, but at least we're principled in our opinions.
New issue. today is the first day of public school in New York, and you are both coming out in your campaigns as critics of the Common Core standards and curriculum. I wonder if it's for the same reasons. Mr. Estorino, what's wrong with Common Core?
Well, yesterday we put our little one on the bus for the first time as she goes off to kindergarten. And as any parent knows, you know, school is extraordinarily important. I'm a product of public schools. I went to public schools. I was on the school board. That was my first public service. And my wife's a teacher, a special education teacher. So I believe very much in public education. Here in New York, we are spending more than any state per pupil, and we're in the middle of the pack in results, and that should be unacceptable. We should have the best public school system for our money, and we're not getting it. Common Core is a disaster and has been since day one. This state, under this governor, rushed into the implementation because there was federal money, and they needed money. And so instead of understanding what they were getting into, they jumped at the dollars, rushed into this, and it's been a disaster. Now, there are many states that are getting out of Common Core, and it's something that I have said I will do for a variety of reasons. And when we do get out of it, we're going to replace it with better standards than even Common Core. See, this argument that if you're not for Common Core, you're not for raising standards. You want dumb kids. That's ridiculous. Now, and that's meant to shut up debate. And
let me follow up for a second, because your campaign website says you want to bring control of education back to the local level. That's one of your reasons, which is similar to, and I'm going to see how you would put yourself in the national context of the Republican Party here, similar to the Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Chuck Grassley campaign to defund it in Washington, because they're concerned that the federal government is imposing a liberal agenda on conservative parents by a Common Core. Are you a Ted Cruz Republican when it comes to local control?
Yeah, so you're doing, Brian, what some like to do, put it into a little box. How about Diane Ravitch, who is very liberal, who is a very outspoken critic of Common Core, and for the same reason. She's calling for an investigation by Congress into why federal government is involved in what should be a state education decision and policy.
But I'm just trying to clarify if you're concerned.
No, the answer to your question is I'm Rob Astorino, and I oppose Common Core because I'm a parent, and I've dealt with this issue at the kitchen table with my kids, and because I've been immersed in education my whole life, not to the extent that Professor Teachout is.
Are you concerned that the federal standards will skew education to the left?
No, I'm concerned that it should not be the federal bureaucrats' decision on what happens in classrooms in New York State or any state for that matter.
Now, Zephyr Teachout, I read your op-ed calling Common Core part of a larger coup in this country where a few moneyed interests use their wealth to steer public policy. Why place Common Core in that context?
I have a lot of thoughts about Common Core. So I'll start with answering your question, but I want to talk about it more broadly. You know, when I really started investigating Common Core, and I think like a lot of people, I was really attracted to it at first because it sounds good and high standards are really important. And the idea of rigor and logic in the classroom, all that's very attractive. But what I discovered, which is what so many parents and teachers have learned, is that this is really an idea that comes from Bill Gates. He spent $200 million promoting it. And he's not somebody who has the experience of what it's actually like to be in a classroom. It's a very complex thing. I myself started my adult life as a special ed teacher's aide. And that was actually in a small classroom with 12 kids. But I'll tell you, that experience has really shaped me. And it shaped me to understand that you can't have this sort of outside imposition of ideas of what should happen in a classroom without really engaging parents and teachers and community members in the process.
But by laying it at the feet of Bill Gates and moneyed interest, is that kind of a conspiracy theory that the hedge fund tycoons are trying to make public education more pro-corporate or something like that?
Well, I'm just looking at this instance. What we do see overall is actually a real assault on public education itself with many, many, many different faces. This is one of those faces in part, and then there's some really good people behind it, but I think they're misguided. And the implementation, I think everybody knows, has been a fiasco. But what I really see is that Common Core, especially tied to testing, and that's really important. These aren't just tools that teachers are allowed to use when they find them useful and not when they don't. but rather tools that then judge a teacher's own pay, a teacher's own raises, a teacher's own treatment within the school system. And I actually first heard about the problems with Common Core from a hairdresser who said that her son, who had loved school, was now coming home crying and talking about how stupid he was. And I see that across the board, is that kids who come in with a lot of confidence are really bored with Common Core, and kids who come in with some anxieties feel enormous amount of stress. And anybody who has spent time in a classroom knows that kids don't learn well under conditions of high stress.
So briefly, how much are you two saying the same thing?
Well, I think teachers are becoming automatrons, teaching to the test. In my kids' classroom last year, 3 weeks were spent solely on the ELA test prep, 3 weeks on math, where in that time they did very little science or social studies. They were pulled out of music and art.
You want fewer standardized tests
or less focus on them. Yeah, there are benchmarks that we need. However, there can be a more portfolio approach. Students in my education plan, I hope people go to robastorino.com and look it up or on Facebook, because we called for some bold initiatives. Number one, stop Common Core, and I have my own ballot line, stop Common Core. Two, the Board of Regents right now is picked in essence by one person, Assemblyman Shelley Silver, because the legislature jointly gets to pick the Board of Regents. I think there should be direct elections of Board of Regents or among school board members who are already elected.
Are you down with that?
We're quickly getting to the areas where Rob and I disagree. And I think there's some elements of agreement around Common Core, but not around education policy more broadly. I know we're going to talk about money in politics, but my concern about directly electing Board of Regents, given our current campaign system, is that you would see the same kind of big money interests engaging in those campaign fights. But I want to talk more deeply about education policy, because Rob and I actually really do disagree here.
And then we are going to go on to some other things. But go ahead.
To me, I want to talk about my vision. And the vision is that we need small class sizes. Class sizes are at an all-time high in New York State. We need 20 kids in a classroom, not 35. We need to make sure that every kid has art and music. And right now, there are guidance counselors serving 350 kids. That does not serve the interests of those kids, and it does not serve the interests of our society.
So just briefly, and again to tie it back into how the two of you agree or disagree with the governor, he is going forward with the Common Core standards and curriculum, but he has delayed making the standardized test scores count for either student or teacher evaluations.
Pure political reasons.
For another couple of years until they get more established.
Till the elections are over.
And he signed a bill for no standardized test-based teaching for grades K through 2 at all. Is it possible the governor is in the Common Sense Center on this? Briefly.
No, I mean, Andrew Cuomo is really serving his own interest. He's serving the interests of the big bankers here, because what we see...
The big bankers?
Well, what we see is that his education policy, he's not paid attention to Common Core. He hasn't listened to parents and teachers. He just sort of rolled it out or allowed it to be rolled out in a ham-handed way without a lot of listening. And instead, his entire education policy has been taking money from public education out of the budget at the same time as putting in tax giveaways to big banks.
Same question.
Well, he's taken billions away in gap elimination from school districts who are now struggling, either increasing class sizes, cutting teachers, cutting programs to make up the difference, and he has not given them the tools to overcome that. In my plan, I think we need to get back to some of our roots too. We have children who are not going to be career ready. I mean, will be career ready, but cannot be college ready. And their path in life is not to go to college, it's to get a good job. And so vocational skills, I think, should be back in the classrooms so they can learn a trade, nutrition programs, foreign language, starting young, not in high school where they'd rather be anywhere else than learning a foreign language, but young where they can learn well. And I speak Spanish, and I've learned more through immersion than 5 years in high school.
Teach Out Astorino debate on WNYC. Forgive me, but our time is limited, and there are some other big things that we want to get to. At least you're smiling as I cut you off. More in a minute, including the big issue dogging Governor Cuomo now, is he soft on corruption, including his own campaign supporters? Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue with our debate between two candidates for governor of New York who are not named Andrew Cuomo. If you're just joining us, still with us in the WNYC studios are Cuomo's main opponent in next Tuesday's Democratic primary, Zephyr Teachout, and the Republican nominee who will be on the ballot in November, Rob Astorino. Mr. Astorino is the two-term Westchester County executive. Ms. Teachout is a Fordham University law professor and author of the book Corruption in America, From Benjamin Franklin's Snuffbox to Citizens United. And we agreed to these candidates' proposal to debate each other here because Governor Cuomo has not agreed to debate Teachout before next Tuesday's primary. Our interest is in democracy and conversation around the issues. By the way, Zephyr Teachout, on that point, why should Governor Cuomo debate you? You're likely to get trounced in the actual vote, the pundits will say, and become a footnote to history. I saw Mickey Carroll from the Quinnipiac poll, though they didn't poll, saying something like that the other day. Front runners usually don't debate candidates not considered serious threats to win their offices. Why should Andrew Cuomo have to deviate from that?
Well, first of all, people say that I'm a long shot, but we have extraordinary amounts of momentum and passion on our side. And in a Democratic primary with less than a million voters, we are going to see a historic upset because people are now not just angry at Andrew Cuomo, which is how my initial support came, and angry at his pick of Kathy Hochul.
As his running mate,
but they're extremely excited about the historic nature of this. They're excited about having the first woman governor. My running mate, Tim Wu, will be the first Asian American elected statewide. But to answer your question,
and I will throw in just by way of self-promotion that our lieutenant governors' back-to-back appearances have been set up for Monday on this show, the day before the election. Your running mate, Tim Wu, has accepted. We're waiting to hear from Kathy Hochul.
Great. So we clearly have momentum on our side. I mean, just look at the last campaign filing. Andrew Cuomo got 137 donations and I got 3,800. There are not that many people who are getting out on the street supportive. But to answer your question more seriously, Andrew Cuomo has an obligation to the public, not just to himself. You know, it's really self-serving to avoid a debate. And what he said the other day, which you may talk about, which is that debates are a disservice to democracy, gets it exactly upside down because it's ultimately disrespectful to the voters
that clip,
at the state.
And I want to get both of your reaction to it. Here is Governor Cuomo speaking skeptically about debates on Tuesday. Listen.
I've been in many debates that I think were a disservice to democracy. So anyone who says debates are always a service to democracy hasn't watched all the debates that I've been in.
Rob Astorino, what are you thinking as you listen to that?
That is the strangest thing I've ever heard in my life, and it's despicable. We have a system in this country, right, wrong, or indifferent, that when voters get to choose, they should be informed. And, you know, I was a long shot in 2009. Westchester County is 2-1 Democrat of its million people, and the polls had me down 30 points at around this time in 2009. I was outspent 5-1. Almost $6 million by my opponent. And what happened in the following 60 days? Not only did I win, but I won by 13 points. And how did I do that? I had about 30% of the Democratic vote support me. I had 25% of the African-American vote and a majority of the Hispanic vote because we reached out. We had a clear vision of what we wanted to do. And my opponent, just like Andrew Cuomo, was snide, didn't want to do anything with debates for the most part. Had become corrupt, was influenced by big money, and the voters decided, okay, we're going to make a change. So I find it hysterical that Andrew Cuomo would sit there and say it's a disservice to democracy. Are you kidding me?
Do you think she might win next Tuesday?
I think she's got as good a chance as anyone else. You know what? It's a Democratic primary. Who am I to say? I have no idea what Democrats are going to do in a primary like this, but I can tell you this. I've met about five people so far in 9 months, traveling all 62 counties who have said, I really like Andrew Cuomo.
Can I just say why a debate is so important at this moment, just briefly?
Very briefly.
Yeah. Andrew Cuomo and I disagree on school funding. We disagree on fracking. We disagree on infrastructure funding. We disagree on the future of this state. And Democratic primary voters deserve to hear us interact on those disagreements.
So let's talk about corruption and democracy in New York State, perhaps the biggest black eye for Governor Cuomo in his first in this term, in his disbanding of the Moreland Commission on Corruption while it was still investigating corruption, and his apparent steering of the commission away from looking at his own campaign financing and supporters. The U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, as you mentioned, Rob Astorino, is investigating all this. What would you have done with the Moreland Commission as governor, and how bad is what the governor did, in your opinion?
Well, we put out an ethics plan that starts with term limits, first and foremost, because I think the longer you're there, the less productive you could be, and certainly the more temptations that will come your way. If you're convicted of a felony and you're in office, you should lose your pension. And again, I ask people to go to robastorino.com and look up our ethics plan, which we put out several weeks before the Moreland Commission broke and is more important today. This whole administration is built on a fraud. It's a fairy tale. Andrew Cuomo, let's start with Startup New York. Here he has spent over $200 million in tax money to set up crony capitalism, where the governor picks and chooses winners, set up only on a specific location of the state and only one industry or so that can come in. $200 million of tax dollars on a fraud that New York is doing well. It's not. You go anywhere upstate. Outside this island that we're on right now, Manhattan, the rest of the state is struggling and mightily. And this program, he's taken $40 million from hurricane relief money to put it on TV for his ad campaign called Startup.
In your opinion.
Now, on let me just finish on Moreland.
Go ahead, real quick.
The Moreland Commission scandal is exactly what's wrong with this state. You have a governor now being investigated for criminal activity, and I think that's not why he's not speaking in public and will try to run out the clock, not have a debate, not speak to the press, not speak to anybody, because his criminal defense attorneys are advising him not to speak. But he still has an obligation to do so. He is under investigation for potential witness tampering, obstruction of justice. Pure power is what he is about. And to direct investigations from the Moreland Commission, his handpicked people, who were deputized by the attorney general with subpoena power. This is independent. There's no question about that. It's like him going to a jury and trying to pull away some jurors and tell them how to vote.
Wrap this up for time. But in your opinion, is Governor Cuomo corrupt?
Yes, absolutely. He has raised – look at his own campaign. He's raised $40 million. That's more than the governors of California, Illinois, Maryland, and Connecticut combined. You look at what the Daily News wrote today on all the pay to play. It's not illegal. What does he need that kind of money for? And what he's used it for is dirty politics. He's used tax dollars to pretend that the state's doing well, and then he's used this dirty money to paint a picture on me and probably Zephyr Teachout that isn't true.
In your opinion, is Governor Cuomo corrupt?
I've given this a lot of thought because I don't like using the word corrupt lightly. And when I was asked about this at first, I'd say I can't look into his heart. Because when I talk about corrupt, I mean somebody who is self-serving when they should be serving the public. But unfortunately, his behavior, continually serving his own interests ahead of the interests of the public, regardless of your ideology, suggests that at heart, he is what we typically call corrupt. I want to answer your other question as well about the Moreland Commission. I want to talk about two things. One is the Moreland Commission and what we should do, because I have really clear ideas about how we break up this old boys network. First, Andrew Cuomo, when he both shut the Moreland Commission down and then may or may not have, we still don't know, directed his top aide to interfere with the Moreland Commission, showed a real lack of respect for the basic idea of law, that all laws apply to everybody equally. Because he shut it down just when it got close to his own campaign donors and went to his own business associates. And the evidence we have on interfering with the Moreland Commission shows that the interference was around his own campaign donors and business associates, and they should not be free from law itself. But on a bigger level.
The governor says a commission that a governor appoints cannot investigate a governor's own campaign financing. It's a conflict of interest. It's up to the legislature to investigate the executive branch. Is he wrong?
Well, he's wrong legally, just because the way the Moreland Commission was set up. It was, in fact, set up to be able to investigate all of this. But more importantly, he's wrong ethically and violates the ethical obligations to the people of the state. When he set it up, he said, people can sleep better at night because we know we have this problem of corruption, but it will go wherever this commission will investigate wherever it needs to investigate. And instead, he then turns around and says, basically, I am the state and the state is me. And that, again, reflects, you know, maybe he's been in power too long and doesn't understand that basically there are areas where you have to respect different roles. There's a previous Moreland Commission under Mario Cuomo's administration, headed by John Furyk, which was truly independent. And Mario Cuomo wasn't always happy with where it led, but it in fact investigated corruption more broadly.
One other thing on this.
I'm sorry, Brian. The Moreland Act of the early 1900s is specific to the executive branch only. So it can be set up by the governor because there might be a conflict of interest with one of his commissioners where he needs investigated. So the Moreland Act allows only the executive branch to investigate itself. This was different, and that's why he's being investigated by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, because he enjoined with the attorney general, who then deputized all 25 members with subpoena power, the power to compel documents and testimony. That's why it purely was independent, and he had no right to interfere with anybody. But in the New York Times story, it was said that the governor himself called in one of the co-chairs and sat down to offer, quote, suggestions and advice. Come on. And telling him basically pull subpoenas back from his supporters, his big money interests, and to go after people in the legislature who he was trying to extort for what he wanted in the act.
And this is all how the sausage is made. Can you point, either of you, to anything about the governor's own campaign finances or support that you think rose to the level of warranting investigation by the Moreland Commission? What's the worst or most possibly corrupt thing that he may have actually done with respect to his own campaign supporters?
I actually want to jump out of these weeds for a second here, because we have a structural problem here in New York State. We have a structural problem of a truly corrupt old boys network that serves itself and serves its donors. So I can point to instances like the $100,000 that Extel, the Poor Door company, gave to Andrew Cuomo just 2 days before getting millions of dollars in subsidies. But my concern, and I think most people in New York State, you know, it's fine to have a few bribery investigations, but we actually need to take on the whole system. And as the former national director of the Sunlight Foundation, as an anti-corruption fighter, I have fought power my whole life. I am well positioned to actually get in there and break up this old boys club.
Your book, Corruption in America, has Citizens United in the subtitle. And that's not corruption like bribery under the table. That's the Constitution as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court. So before we wrap up this corruption part of the show, are you two going to disagree on whether Citizens United is corruption?
Citizens United misunderstands corruption and has led to corruption because the Supreme Court, by allowing completely unfettered corporate spending, has distorted our political system.
Rob Estorino, how much do you agree?
Well, here's what corruption does. Corruption is not just a couple politicians going off in handcuffs. Corruption affects all of us. It affects the foundation of our democracy. It affects everybody because it creates an unlevel playing field where a few chosen people get to get favors and write big checks at the expense of everybody else, because those slimy, corrupt deals that they're cutting for themselves have to be paid for. And who's paying for them? The average citizen, which is why the economy is bad, businesses are leaving, and taxes go up, because we have to pay for those deals.
You don't take this is the First Amendment, free speech, spending equals political speech
position? You know what's necessary? Transparency. That's what's absolutely missing from this equation, because you have 6 months gap between filings. If someone's going to write a big check, then it should be reported the same day. At least people will understand what happened and they can connect their own dots.
The Rob Astorino Zephyr Teach Out debate on The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. We're going to run out of our scheduled time. If you can both give me another 5 minutes, we'll tack fracking on here. because we promised that we would get back to that as a separate issue. So Governor Cuomo is still studying the issue of fracking for natural gas in New York State and has yet to declare if communities that want fracking for economic development can choose to have it on a case-by-case basis. Zephyr Teachout, what would your fracking policy be?
We need to ban fracking. And Governor Andrew Cuomo needs to read the most recent science, the Compendium of Health Professionals, which surveys all the science on it and shows that it is dangerous, toxic, bad for health. And I went to Pennsylvania last week. I visited Dimock, Pennsylvania, and I saw it. I smelled the water. I looked at the water, and I talked to a grandmother whose one-year-old granddaughter was vomiting every morning because of the methane in their water system.
So don't trade environmental safety for jobs. Rob Estorino?
Look, I agree with the National Academy of Sciences on this. I agree specifically with President Obama. The EPA, in fact, Lisa Jackson, who is the administrator, said there's not one documented case of water being corrupted, if you will, by this. Senator Schumer and Gillibrand agree with it. 30 states are doing it very safely. In fact, the Colorado governor, who is a geologist, brought together the environmental community as well as the industry to set up the right safeguards, which is what I would do. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say, yeah, come in, do whatever you want to do, and then leave. It's let's protect the water supply around the Catskills and New York City's drinking water, including I have no problem. Let's set up a buffer zone around the Finger Lakes. But for those communities who want to do it, this is a way, according to the DEC of New York, it would add 50,000 jobs, putting people at all skill levels back to work, bringing in billions in revenue where we could put it back in education or lower taxes. But I think the economic benefits are there. And 65% of our energy in New York comes from natural gas and nuclear.
Can there be no such thing as safe fracking with standards?
There's no such thing as safe fracking. And I just want to question the question that you gave, Brian, because the industry routinely overstates the number of jobs per well, saying it could be 81 jobs per well, when in fact a recent study shows that it's closer to 4. And so I want to be very clear that the best thing we can do for our economy is invest in renewable energy and ban fracking. And you cannot have wineries in fracking. You cannot have sustainable agriculture in fracking. So we need to ban fracking right now, in part in order to develop our extraordinary upstate economy.
Is there a common ground position possible based around this court case that's going on now, which says individual communities can decide for themselves? And there are dozens that have voted locally to ban fracking. There are dozens that have declared that they're interested in it in their community. And that's not good enough for you?
Absolutely not. That's an important organizing tool. But we need to ban fracking in New York State and take the lead on renewable energy and building the hundreds of thousands of renewable
energy
jobs.
Are you for community by community?
I was endorsed by the New York State League of Conservation Voters last year because of my record. And I very strongly want to protect the environment. But we also have to find that healthy balance that lets us move forward to bring in jobs, bring in revenue, lower taxes. Ask the 4 people per well that are out of work today upstate whether they would like to have a job. I respect that opinion by the Court of Appeals, but for those communities that wish to allow fracking, we need to set up the right regulations and safeguards so they can do that.
All right. Before we get to closing statements, let's do a very short lightning round to help people know you both a little better. Rob Estorino, what's the last nonfiction book you read?
Nonfiction. I read Gladwell's book, David and Goliath.
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
You?
Wind, Sun, and Stars by Saint-Exupéry.
How about the last novel?
Ooh, you know, I don't read a lot of novels. I like to read nonfiction or you know, autobiographies or biographies.
I was rereading All the King's Men.
Do you own a tablet computer or a smartphone?
I a smartphone, but not a tablet computer.
Not a tablet, but I own an Apple iPhone.
Do you personally tweet or use Facebook?
I do.
Yes, that Twitter account, that's my Twitter account. Zephyr Teachout.
Ever play Minecraft?
Yes, but it's been a while.
I do it with my 11-year-old who loves it.
Do you rent or own your home?
We own our home.
Rent. I think everybody who's been following New York politics knows that I rent now.
What are the top 3 news organizations that you rely on to inform you, and you don't have to suck up to anybody who's in the room?
Well, I read the New York Times every day. I read that. Right now, my top 3 news organizations without any sucking up are WNYC and the Daily News and the New York Times.
I read the Times and the Wall Street Journal every day. Of course, the New York Post, Page Six, who could live without it? And for TV, I do watch Fox News and CNN.
Do you have a favorite sport?
I do. The one that I play or one that I watch?
Your call.
I love playing soccer.
And what do you watch?
Well, I'm a Mets fan.
NFL football.
Do you have a favorite movie of all time?
The Godfather. And let's see if it gets me in trouble.
Gosh, a favorite movie. I remember when I was a kid, my favorite movie was Mutiny on the Bounty.
And do you have a suit or a dress that costs more than $500?
I do.
I don't.
All right. Thank you for putting up with the lightning round. And now you each get 2 minutes for closing statements. By the toss of the coin earlier, monitored by three independent panels of onlookers, I promise, Mr. Astorino, you go first.
Well, first of all, Brian, thank you for this time. Zephyr, it was good to be with you. Good luck on Tuesday. I think the question I ask every New Yorker, whether it's here in New York City or any of the upstate counties, anywhere, are we winning or are we losing? It's really that simple. Under this governor, are we winning or are we losing as a state? Are we advancing or are we falling back? And I think it's, you know, objectively speaking, again, at all the categories that you look at objectively, we're losing and losing badly. We have the highest taxes. We have the worst business climate, worst economic outlook. The AARP says it's the worst state to retire in. The most corruption. And that's from the University of Illinois, by the way. But we see this governor now, who is under investigation by federal prosecutors for his role in the Moreland scandal. And that's disgraceful. And all of the objective proof is we've had 400,000 New Yorkers leave, with probably 400,000 more ready to go unless we change how we do business in this state. And so I have said that we need to lower taxes across the board so people have breathing room. The middle class could actually live in their homes as opposed to leave. And they're going to the Carolinas. They're going to Florida. They're going to Texas. They're going where the jobs are and the cost of living is less. So we have got to make sure that we've got an economy that is back on track. Governor Cuomo has failed miserably, miserably on this. It's all a fraud and a fairy tale through Startup, which is false, the Moreland Commission, which is corrupt, of course, and we're paying for that corruption. So I ask people to go to robastorino.com or my Facebook page and learn directly on our education plan, which would set up new diplomas for kids, which would actually have the regions accountable, which would actually get rid of Common Core, our jobs plan, which would put jobs back and have the middle class actually be able to stay here, and our education plan. So go to robastorino.com, learn more about it, because if the press isn't going to cover some of this, the important stuff, then you should.
Zephyr Teachout, 2 minutes.
Well, people say that I'm a long shot, but what I see is that we are on the verge of a historic upset. We have so much momentum in our campaign. I just received the endorsement of the Sierra Club, of the New York chapter of the National Organization for Women, and of the people who run this state, the Public Employees Federation. And every day there are thousands of more people coming to our campaign because we are faced with these two very different futures. A future under a teach-out-woo administration is a traditionally Democratic New York state where we really invest in our public schools, in our public infrastructure, and in the big dreams of the future. And the big dream right now is we have the potential to be the leader in renewable energy. I also think, we didn't talk about it today, we should actually be the leader in 21st century transportation technologies and the center of the next wave of high tech. So we have a positive vision of New York State. It's actually one of the ways in which I think that, you know, I really respect Rob coming on and debating the issues, and I look forward to many, many more debates during the general election. But one of the ways in which, you know, Rob Astorino and Andrew Cuomo are similar, and I sometimes feel like I'm sitting here debating Andrew Cuomo while I am debating Rob Astorino, is that the story they tell about this state is one where everybody's on the verge of leaving and there aren't enough resources here and we need to give more tax giveaways to the wealthy and the big bankers. And I just really disagree. I see extraordinary abundance in this state, and I think we need, as traditional Democrats, to truly invest in it. So I supported Andrew Cuomo 4 years ago because he said he was going to clean up Albany and he said he was a Democrat. And what I've seen over 4 years and what more and more New Yorkers are seeing is that he hasn't cleaned up Albany and he's not a Democrat.
Well, that concludes our Rob Astorino Zephyr Teachout debate. He will be on the November ballot as the Republican nominee for governor of New York. She is on next Tuesday's Democratic primary ballot against Governor Cuomo. The governor has still not agreed to debate Teachout or to come on this program for a solo campaign interview, which we've invited him to do. He still has 4 days. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Babygate, how to survive pregnancy and parenting in the workplace. Stay with us.